Hey, ladies and gentlemen, let's call this meeting, this Thursday, May 12, 2016 meeting of the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Chairman Noe?
Here.
Mayor Silverberg?
Here.
Chairman Bulova?
Here.
Supervisor Bulova?
Here.
Board Member Fassett? Mayor Parrish?
Here.
Mayor Silverthorne?
Here.
Councilmember Snyder?
Here.
Councilmember Rochelle?
Here.
Senator Black?
Here.
Delegate Hugo?
Here.
Delegate Minshew?
Here.
Mr. Garzinski? Ms. Bushu?
Here.
Mayor Foreman?
Here.
Ms. Cuervo?
Here.
Mr. Horsley?
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Fantastic. First item on the agenda is the minutes of the April 28th meeting, which I believe were sent out in advance. Any questions or comments on that?
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to move approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion, you weren't here at the meeting, but you can't second.
Say that.
That's right, I'm not on the... I'm sorry. I'm looking around here. Ms. Rischel, do you want to second that?
Oh, second.
I'm looking for someone who's here. I'm looking for someone who's here. We didn't have this quite robust of attendance. So motion by Ms. Bulova, second by Ms. Rischel. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Chairman, I'd like to abstain in as much as Mr. Way was here in my state.
So, extension Mr. Parrish, Mr. Buono, Ms. Bushu, Senator Black, Mr. Foreman, abstain. Okay. We have a presentation on the Draft 17 program. Ms. Backman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While Pamela's gearing it up. So we are here tonight to discuss the FY 2017 program and interim project evaluation. Just a brief overview, the authority issued a call for projects in September 2015 for the FY 17 program. The projects were due on November 30th, and we received 25 projects. One project was subsequently withdrawn prior to the evaluation and the analysis phase. Regarding the interim project evaluations, the authority looks at MBTA quantitative scores, of course the HB 599 scores, congestion reduction relative to cost ratios, and there are qualitative considerations. And what you will receive in this presentation today is all of those components, the MBTA staff recommendations, and the next step. One thing I do want to note, which is the action item on the agenda, is that the recommendation from the authority's planning and programming committee is to take all 24 projects out for public comment without a recommended list. But we'll speak a little bit about that, a little more detail a little later. So this FY 2017 program, as you know, is a one-year program. It is the last program based on your current long-range transportation plan, Transaction 2040. As you are aware, we are in the process of updating Transaction 2040, and when we complete the update, we would like to do a full six-year program, which encompasses years fiscal years 18 through 2023. This is the first program in which all projects are subject to HB 599, and I want to speak a little about that. When we did the two-year 15-16 program last year, we did not evaluate transit projects under HB 599. The authority wanted to, but we wanted to make sure that the HB 599 model gave an equal comparison for both transit and highway projects. So we did do a test analysis of the transit projects, working with the transit agencies. We worked out the minor quirks, and so for this program, we have all 24 projects underwent the HB 599 process. Also of note, this is the first program that coincides with the first round of the HB 2 process, which is the statewide congestion reduction bill, if you will, for Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads anyway, and other priorities throughout the state. Congestion reduction impacts for this program are based on completed projects. That's the way we have to do it. We really can't ascertain congestion reduction benefits on a project that is not completed for evaluation purposes. There are 24 candid projects that were evaluated, and what you see highlighted in green is a little different from what's in your packet. The total amount requested in having further conversations with WMATA for their ACAR traction power upgrade project for the blue line. They said the request should be $100,000 less than what we were reflecting. And also the town of Herndon's project should be $11,000 less. So that number, the $667,843,951, is different from what's in your packet due to the revisions that we've heard from. PAYGO, you have approximately $267,700,000 in PAYGO revenue. So doing the math, there is a deficit if you want to fund all 24 projects. And that gap, if you will, is about $400,000. I'm sorry. If it were only $400,000. regarding the interim project evaluations, again, they were based on MBTA quantitative scores, which incorporates the HB 599 rating for the year 2040. The authority previously adopted a weight of 45% regarding the HB 599 rating. And the authority's eight other criteria has a weighting of 55%. The congestion reduction relative to cost ratios uses the HB 599 inputs for 2020 and 2040. So what the state did, they did an analysis for the years 2020 and 2040. For staff, we looked at 2040 regarding the incorporating the HB 599 with the quantitative scores, because for transaction, which is where our performance measures were evaluated with the projects, we only did a 2040 analysis. The congestion reduction relative to cost ratios also looked, we did an analysis with the total project cost and the MBTA request. Regarding the qualitative considerations, one thing that we were looking at is continuity of project funding. I think we had about 12 projects that you funded previously that requested additional funds. We also looked at cost sharing, geographic and modal balance, and the other tag is really all-encompassing. There are some projects that were submitted to the authority that were also submitted to the state for the HB2 evaluation, and then there is, I know one project in particular was submitted to MBTC for the I-66 inside the Beltway toll component, I believe that's the word, component project process. So that's really what the other is for. Just as a reminder, the MBTA quantitative scores, congestion reduction is 45%. Project readiness, 15, reduced VMT, 5, safety, 5, connectivity, which two criteria are actually rolled into connectivity, is at 10, improved bike ped connections, 10, management operations, 5, and cost sharing, 5. Again, the authority's quantitative score, or the authority score of criteria is 55, congestion reduction is 45, and that's how you get the 100%. And these weights were previously adopted by the authority. Now, I know this chart looks a little scribbly, and I will ask Keith to speak to the details, but what you're seeing in front of you now is the MBTA quantitative scores based on the staff analysis. Keith, would you?
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the authority. The quantitative scores were developed in a way that's consistent to that which you saw during the FY15-16 program. And I want to draw your attention, I know it's hard to read on the screen, but to the right-hand side, the final two columns, we have the weighted score for each project and the rank. And these projects are listed from highest score to lowest score. Across towards the left-hand side, you see the HB 599 rating for 2040. It has a number 45 above that column. That shows the 45% weighting for the HB 599 ratings. And then for each of the other score, each other criteria, as Monica mentioned, we have the weightings for those. Now, the kind of the orange heat map is intended to show how each project was scored by each criteria. The deepest, the darkest orange equates to a high. The lighter orange is a medium, and lighter again is a low score. They're the three ways we score each criteria for each project, and that affects how we calculate the overall quantitative score.
Can I put a pause here? I'm sorry, because I think other people are going to say the money. I don't know if it's the settings on the printer or what. The actual, we have the colors, the numbers. If the numbers are only visible.
That was intentional. We took the numbers off because.
Well, see, then I don't think it's the settings on the printer, but you didn't completely
yes,
check them
I
off.
Think,
they didn't need to be completely off.
I can
completely
see the ones.
I see ones, but I don't see twos and threes.
It's a quirk of the printer. The numbers are actually still there. Gosh. We didn't want to delete them in case we had to recreate the table with it at the beginning. So, but we thought it'd be easier just to concentrate on the colours and not the numbers. Otherwise, people will get their calculators out and check the arithmetic.
I'm better at math than that.
So essentially, you can see if you look down the columns, you can see which projects score well relative to other projects. And if you can look along the horizontal rows, you can see how each project did under each criteria. And I can go into that in more detail if you'd like, but I just wanted you to understand how we actually had scored these. So that's the first component Mark had mentioned, the quantitative scores. The second component of the evaluation is congestion reduction relative to cost. So there's two components to this. There's the congestion reduction piece and the cost piece. So this graphic talks to congestion reduction. And what we're trying to show here, just for some sample projects, is how we calculate the congestion reduction for each project. Essentially, it's the area under the graph. The graph is formed by taking output from HB599 for each project. You may recall that there are seven criteria that are used in HB599. We take one of those, the reduction in person hours of delay, which we then convert to an annual number. And we have that number for 2020 and for 2040, and we draw a straight line between the two. Whatever HB599 tells us, that's what we draw. You see every project ends on the right-hand side at 2040, but on the left-hand side, they don't all start in the same place. The blue one starts in 2020, indicating this project essentially became operational in that year. The red project starts a couple of years earlier, and the green project starts a couple of years later. You'll also notice that the slope of the graph varies between the three projects, and this reflects what HB599 shows us. The project may have a higher performance in 2020 compared to 2040, or it could be the reverse. It is relatively unusual for the project to be the same in 2020 and 2040, but it's possible. So that's how we calculate the congestion reduction part of this. And then to calculate the cost information, we actually look at two costs. So we do this calculation twice, although our preferred approach is to use the total project cost for each project, regardless of funding sources, because this gives us a true apples-to-apples comparison of how each project performs. The MBTA share essentially is intended to look at how each project performs based on the amount of money that MBTA is putting into the has been requested to put into the project in the FY17 program. When we came to look at this in more detail, we realised that that was actually going to be potentially misleading. So the MBTA share not only includes what was requested for the FY17 programme, but also where indicated by the project applications, planned future funding requests to MBTA, and 100% of any identified funding gaps in the project application. As a worst-case scenario, that MBTA may be asked to provide all of that money as well. So the MBTA share is actually larger than what's been requested for the FY17 program. It doesn't, however, include what has been previously approved for any such projects that got funding in one of our previous two funding programs. There's a couple of other assumptions that we make there, which you can see on the screen. So having got the congestion reduction piece and the cost piece, it's then a relatively simple process to divide one by the other. And what we show in this table here is the ratios using the total project cost and the MBTA share as I defined it on the previous slide. And these are actually ranked by our preferred metric, the total project cost. And just to give you a bearings here, the numbers that are shown under total project cost for this first project in Arlington, 1.56, that indicates 1.56 reduction in hours of delay per dollar spent on the project. So each of these numbers gives you the hours of delay per dollar spent. And you can see these do vary from top to bottom of the list. The third component of the evaluation is qualitative considerations. This is as much...
I'm sorry. When the letter finishes presentation, we'll come back.
Okay.
The third component, qualitative considerations, this is as much for the planning and programming committee and ultimately the authority to take into account as it is from a staff point of view to apply these. But we just want to note that, as Monica has already said, that 12 projects out of the 24 are actually requesting continuation funds from the authority at this time. The authority is under no obligation to meet these requests for continuation funds, although there is a logical expectation where a project gets funding that we will continue to fund that project. Just a note here about invoicing history and current status of projects. We attempted to take a look at what's being asked for the FY17 program versus when those funds would likely be spent. And so, as you would imagine, not every project that's requesting the funds necessarily will spend them in FY17. In fact, in some cases, they may get spent out over quite a few years. And a couple of projects that we identified with what are called apparent cost overruns. So this table on the screen now combines the congestion reduction ratios and the quantitative scores. You can see them side by side. In this case, the congestion reduction relative to cost ratio is only shown for total project cost, and this table is ranked by that ratio. But we show alongside that the corresponding quantitative score and the ranking based on the quantitative score as well. So you can see how the projects performed under these two numerical approaches, the two numerical components of the analysis. Based on this analysis, MBTA staff recommends 9 projects be funded as shown on this list. We've denoted which ones are continuation and which ones are new, and the total funding request associated with these projects comes to $493 million.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may, so when we had the meeting with the Planning and Programming Committee, the staff recommendation was around 7 projects at a total cost of $473 million. We've since gone back and had some follow-up meetings. And so the 2 new projects, if you will, that's been added to the list to make 9 was the 8-car traction power upgrades for the Metro Rail project and the VRE Manassas Park project. Now, again, this is a staff recommendation. The Planning and Programming Committee recommended just taking all 24 projects out for public comment, which we were going to do anyway, but without noting which projects are being recommended for funding at this time. There are some things we need to follow up on. Namely, there are some projects that, are, like I said earlier, that were submitted for HB2 that we need to determine what's going on with. And then we as of last evening, still getting some additional information regarding some of the projects that were previously submitted. So regarding the next steps, if pending authority action tonight, to advertise the project list of the 24 projects, the public comment period will start tomorrow, May 13th and will end on June 17th at 5 p.m. You can comment online, in person. We're going to have the public hearing on June 9th, which is prior to your June 9th authority meeting. And we're going to have some town hall meetings. Several of the jurisdictions are having town hall meetings to talk about the projects that are being considered in their particular localities. One thing that I must note, your finance committee meets next week. That's important because even looking at the MBTA staff recommendation of $493 million, you don't have $493 million. You have $267 million. So when your finance committee meets next week, your financial advisor is going to give an update on where or some of the information that they presented last year regarding our bonding capacity and different scenarios regarding what scenario does the authority, if you so choose to bond, which scenario would you be amenable to? June 9th, as I said, is your public hearing. The green bullet that's noted here, because there was a change, the CTB is now scheduled to adopt their six-year program on June the 14th. Your finance committee will meet again on June 16th. At that June 16th meeting of your finance committee, we will ask the finance committee to make a recommendation because that is the day before the end of the public comment period. But we will ask the finance committee to make a recommendation to the planning and programming committee and to the authority regarding if you want to issue bonds, what should the cap be? And so that's a very important date. Last on the June list, MBTA staff will have an updated recommendation based on the public comments we received, the comments from the public hearing, the additional evaluation of the project. We will have an update at your July 1 Planning and Programming Committee meeting. At that Planning and Programming Committee meeting, we will ask PPC to make a recommendation to the authority for adoption at the authority's July 14th meeting. But I want to emphasize, even though MBTA staff has made a recommendation on projects that should be funded, that is not the recommendation that the Planning and Programming Committee made. PPC said take all 24 projects out without a recommendation for which should be funded.
And let me just say, on behalf of our committee, we wanted the opportunity to hear from the public rather than, you know, putting on the table what the committee's recommendations were, because these really at this point are staff's recommendations, and so we, you know, wanted to have the opportunity to hear. From the community, we've got public comment and public hearings coming up, and so we wanted to before, you know, making recommendations. Also, we'll be hearing more about this as we consider the opportunity to bond. But if one of you could just say a few very brief words about our capacity for being able to bond. Mr. Longy is here. So our capacity for bonding, we have bond rating now, and we have the capacity to, you know, to go on, you know, debt.
We currently have the highest AA rating that you can receive, and we ran a series of analyses based on a $200 million issuance, $300 million issuance, going all the way to $600 million, and none of those issuances would cause a diminishment of our bond rating. The market is expected that the authority at some point over time will use its debt capacity. At a $200 million issuance, the authority will still have $1.6 billion left in debt capacity from 2017 through 2037, and it will have about $4.1 billion in expected paygo over that same 20-year period.
It's important for us to, you know, have that context while we're looking at the project.
Absolutely, and if I may, keeping in mind, if you do issue bonds, For FY 2018, assuming we have a six-year program starting with fiscal year 2018, it will reduce the available PAYGO revenues for 2018 because you have your debt service payment.
I think the key point being that we have more capacity than we can. We have more capacity than we could use. We couldn't build $1 billion of the projects if we wanted to. That said, the fact that we have the capacity doesn't mean we have to use any penny.
Okay.
There's some upward limit that would be considered the responsible amount to go to, and we want to stay under that upward limit.
And for next week's finance committee meeting, PFM is updating the August 5th debt scenario. I think the numbers are largely going to stay the same, but we'll also present a progression of events that would occur as if the authority were to decide to go to market, including making sure that all the funding partners, because some of these projects are involved with other funding sources, are in alignment as well before the authority were to commit to issuing debt.
Well, I mean, before I ask the question I was going to ask regarding debt, what is the current debt? Can you give us some, just, I don't know.
We issued for, in December 2014, we issued 60 or just under $70 million in debt.
And if I may, Mr. Chairman,
sure.
Describe the reason for doing that.
We did that to effectuate the FY14 program project selection and start to show some progress on projects actually being able to be deployed within the region.
And it was also part of the bond validation suit that we wanted to do this first issuance of bond.
Okay. You want to piggyback on that other one? I'll come back to my other question.
Mine's just really easy.
Okay. Well, let me just go on then real fast. Regarding the list, first of all, just speaking on behalf of Alexandria, I, of course, were very pleased regarding the funding for the possibility for Potomac York Metro. We've been working very hard on this, and these funds are critical. And it's not just, of course, it affects constituents of Fairfax and Arlington and elsewhere. And so it's truly a Northern Virginia transportation project. So that's terrific. As far as the West End Transitway, it's a very important project as well, and it would help connect people to Metro and keep people out of the cars. And there's a lot of development that's supposed to go on over there on the West End. It already exists, but also it's a big traffic jam, and a lot of people taking Beauregard to frankly to Fairfax County and backing it. So I hope that we can move that up a bit. There was something else, but now, anyway, I'll let Mr. Chevron talk about that. Thank you very much.
Jerry, thank you.
With the public comment, they can go to the NVTA website, and is there a place for them to make the public comment? I know that when we passed out the cards before, folks have gone on and done the surveys. This is different from the surveys.
That was for the transaction. Transaction
Correct.
Actually has its own website, but you can submit public comments. We have a link where you can submit your comments via email on the authority's website.
Okay, so if we do a paper or send this out for the public, we can show them the link. And all
absolutely, that. And that will be in the press release that will go out tomorrow pending authority action this evening. And the legal notice.
So when you do the press release, you're going to send it to the NVTA members? We can just...
Yes.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
I remembered my final point. It's related to public comment, and that is we are definitely going to be seeking public comment in the coming days with Transportation Commission meeting, and et cetera. So I wanted to make you all aware of that, but we're about to hear a lot from the public. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Out of the nine projects recommended, do we know which ones and how many are looking at other funding considerations such as HB2? Because obviously, based on the schedule you have, we will know that based on the CTB actions before this is finalized. At the same time, it kind of tells us how much headroom there might be or might not be if, you know, four of these are looking at HB2 or inside the Beltway tolls. So do we have a feel for that at this time?
Well, I believe as of now, there are two projects. Initially, there were 10 projects that were submitted to the authority and to the Commonwealth for HB2. I believe, without having seen their draft yet, that there are two projects that the Commonwealth are currently vetting that's on the authority list, but they're not on the list of nine just yet. And this is why we wanted to adopt our program after the Commonwealth adopted their program, so it will give us an opportunity to go back and make any recommendations based on projects that were advanced that we were looking at.
But none of them are on the list of nine, right?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, I had a question on the continuation issue. I guess on slide 11, 12 projects requesting continuation funding, and you sort of speak to this saying, being new to this, that the NDTA does not have a rule or a policy about how to deal with continuation funding. So I guess my question is, what are the challenges with that? In particular, how do we assess whether or not the project is spending down fast enough to actually legitimately deserve continuation funding?
That's a great question, Board Member Fassett. So one of the, and the authority does not have a policy that says if they funded you in a previous programming year, then you will get funded in subsequent programming years. However, there is an expectation that if you receive funding previously, then you will continue to receive funding. As part of my executive director's report, except for this evening because you last met 2 weeks ago, I have a project status update of every project that the authority has funded. Because at this point, all projects have executed standard project agreements. So we know in reviewing that project list which projects are active, even if they are not drawing down MBTA funds, and because we have some projects that are drawing or are active in advancing but are using RSTP funds because there is a sunset provision on RSTP funds, so they want to use those funds first. However, they are quickly getting to an end of those funds or a certain phase of the project, and they are have applied to the authority for continuation funding to do a subsequent phase. Then there are projects that, looking at the project status update, that may not be as far along in the project development process as others. That's how we can really make the call. And these project status updates come from the localities and agencies themselves. We send this out, and the responses we get back are from the localities and agencies. Also, we know which projects are drawing down MBTA funds, because the authority you pay on a reimbursement basis. So when we get the invoices, we know which projects are invoicing us and which ones are not. And the ones that are not, those are the ones that I'm really trying to track to see what's going on.
Well, I guess I'm thinking I don't mind somebody drawing down elsewhere first, especially if they're sunset provisions. And I know there's only been a couple years of funding so far, so it's not necessarily going to be a problem yet. But it strikes me that as we move forward, while there's an expectation of continued funding, which is probably a good thing, that we also have to come up with some sort of a way of assessing. The last thing this body would want, I think, is a huge amount of money in reserve that's just sitting there that starts to become a target for people to say, you're not spending your money, or why do you want more money, or we gave you money and you're not spending it fast enough. So I just strikes me, and you would know best within the MBTA, how we might take that up or consider approaches or policies or criteria upon which you as staff or we as a board would weigh the choices we're going to have, if not this year, then at least in future years.
Well, I can add, the authority last year adopted a policy for FY17 only, and we call it the Policy 17, the FY2017 drawdown policy, that says if you are funded as part of this program, you must draw down by June 30th, 2019. We just had a governance and personnel committee meeting prior to this authority meeting that says we're looking at revising that policy because we don't, to address, to get to your comment, Mr. Fassett, we don't want someone sending an invoice for, let's say, staff time and say, well, we've met the provisions of the policy, so now we have that drawdown. So now we're looking at getting fine-tuning that policy and saying that after the adoption of the SPA, and you have your policy 16 says that you have to have an executed, approved SPA within 6 months of adoption of the program. So after that time frame, your project must show activity. If your project does not show activity and it is not advancing, then myself as the executive director, I need to have a discussion with the locality or agency, then make a recommendation to the finance committee regarding the status of the project.
Right. Certainly doesn't mean continuation funding wouldn't be available. It just might not be available yet.
Absolutely. So,
I think another thing that's important is starting in FY18, after we've done the transaction update, we'll be moving to a 6-year planning process. So because it does cut both ways. On the one hand, you don't want to guarantee continuation funding to a project that isn't really continuing. The flip side is you don't want a bunch of projects for which we paid for design and we don't have the revenues to pay for construction. Once we go to 6-year planning, then 6-year budgeting, we can, first of all, we can lay out to the ensuring the project is completed piece, because we can spread that funding over 6 years. And when something falls behind,
updated,
we push it back into 6 year plan.
That's good.
Thank you, Chairman. One bit of data that I'd love to have before we make our decisions are, how do our projects that are on our approved list mesh with other projects that are funded or in the pipeline, for example? We all know that the I-66 outside the Beltway Transform C6 project is going forward. How would, for example, the $370 million I-66-28 project mesh with that I-66 outside the Beltway project? How does some of the projects inside the Beltway mesh with what the NVTC is doing? So those are some data points I'd love to figure out, just to see how the different projects that are being funded from different sources could mesh together.
Absolutely.
Jim, following up on that, and something that Jay said about the target of having a large sum of funds that are not expended, I'm looking at the I-66 Route 28 interchange, which it certainly seems to be a meritorious project, but we're talking about $750 million, and so it just raises a question in my mind whether, you know, how do we expend $750 million in a relatively brief period of time, because we're including design, engineer, right away construction, and so it just raises a question, and I just thought I would mention that as something that we might be looking at.
Thank you. I almost hesitate to ask this question because we'll see where it goes. I'm looking at page 10, congestion reduction relative to cost. And I'm wondering if that calculation is based upon the cost of the project in the current year.
I'm sorry, could you repeat?
I'm wondering if that calculation, I assume it's a calculation.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that calculation that helps us determine whether we do it or not, gives us a ranking, whether that calculation is done relative to the cost in the current year.
It's relative to the cost as submitted to us.
The total?
The total.
Or just the amount of funding they're looking for in a particular year?
In on table 10, in that column, it's the total project cost.
Total project cost. Okay, thank you.
Regardless of where the money's coming from and whether there's past or future money involved.
Okay.
It's every dollar. It's really the only way you can make an apples-to-apples comparison.
Thank you.
We actually came up and tried to gain it and figure out, could you ask for $1 million a year for 10 years and make your project look like the greatest? That's what they said. Find a way to fix that. Anything else? Yeah, Pete, Tim.
Yeah, just for the staff, a question, and I, Chairman Bowles, I appreciate y'all are bringing all the projects for review at the sort of public hearing. I guess my question, I'm looking at the NBTA, the quantitative scores, which is the chart for page 6, and you look at the columns there, and you've got the scoring, and I heard you mention 9 projects. So you've got the 599 projects in the first column, and then there's the NBTA weighting, and I think you mentioned 9 staff recommendations, but it doesn't, I was just thinking that it would be the top 9 on the NBTA weighting chart. So why, actually the people will have a debate about the 599 weighting to the NBTA weighting, but why did the staff recommendation differ from the top 9 on the NBTA weighting chart?
That's a very good question, thank you. What I'd like to do is refer you to slide 12, which combines the congestion reduction rises, cost ratios, and quantitative scores, simply because it summarizes the information in one place. Essentially, the approach we adopted, given the legal mandate on the authority to give priority to projects which achieve the greatest congestion reduction relative to cost, we are kind of using the CRRC ratio as the primary means of ranking the projects. So essentially, the projects that are shown in green, the recommended projects, staff recommended projects, really kind of count down from the top of the list, but they do skip a few on the way down, and there are various reasons why some projects were skipped, but and indeed why the Potomac Yard project, which is quite low down the list, were added in. But essentially, we started with the highest CRRC ratios and made some adjustments based upon other considerations.
So you took the CRRC ratio in combination with the MBTA quantitative score. Now, again, some of these projects that you see that are in the top, I know at least one is on the HB2 list right now for recommended funding. So these are some of the considerations that we're trying to navigate through. Others, we were saying that we needed additional information on before making a full recommendation to the Planning and Programming Committee. So that's why I said earlier, the list of 9 that the staff recommendation will more than likely change by the time when we have the July 1 Planning and Programming Committee meeting.
So I guess the question is, so we have the 599 rating, which we get from VDOT, and then we have within NBTA staff, we have 2 ratings. We have the NBTA rating, and then we have the CRRC rating. Why do you have 2 ratings? Why don't you have 1? If there's an NBT rating, why would we follow that? I'm just trying to figure it out.
Well, the law requires that 2 things regarding authority funding of a project. It must be in our long-range transportation plan, and it must undergo the HB 599 evaluation. Your enabling legislation, and that's HB 2313, your enabling legislation lays out other performance measures that you have to look at, and this is some of the things that you see that are encompassed in the MBTA score. So then we have to marry that. And then the law says you have to give priority to the projects that provide the greatest level of congestion reduction relative to cost and document it. So we had to add that layer on. So we are essentially, we have 3 specific evaluations, if you will, that we're marrying into the quantitative, well, 2 that you're marrying into the quantitative score, and then we do have the congestion reduction relative to cost ratio.
So let me make this clear. I'm just, because this is something that's confusing. No, I mean,
good luck, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for the chuckle. But here's what it boils down to. The law requires that we measure a lot of things. In some cases, the law is unclear about what we do with that measurement when we're done with it. The one thing the law is very clear about is it says, and I can't remember which bill this is because there were a lot of them in rapid succession for a while there. It's amazing how many laws were passed about how we spent money before we actually had money, because most of this was done in legislation before 2313 was passed. What the law requires very clearly is that we give preference to those projects which relieve the most congestion relative to cost. This chart here is, very roughly speaking, it consists of data from the HB 599 score divided into the cost of the project. And so the CRRC ratio is, how do you say that? It's hours of congestion relieved per dollar spent on the project.
Essentially, yeah.
That is the thing that the law is crystal clear that we must use as our first set of criteria. That said, there may be a project that scores well there that for some reason, some other reason, isn't a good candidate for funding in a particular year. Hence, things may get bumped off of the list. But that is that. This chart here must be the first quantitative criterion that we look at. We can't look at anything else before this because the law explicit. So, for example, the HB 539 score. What the law says is that VDOT shall evaluate the projects for congestion relief. Full stop. So it says they do that. We then use that data. And we do provide that information. But the most important thing we do is we use that data to come up with this ratio because it's this ratio that is the first pass-through on any quantitative measurement of the benefit of the project. There then becomes a series of other things that we either have to consider or should consider, but this is always the first pass. Is that, I'm looking at lawyers, am I saying that right?
And when we mentioned earlier regarding qualitative considerations, there are some projects that said, you know, oh, the first drawdown may be in 19 or 20. So those are the types of things that were assessed in making the staff recommendations.
Yes, it's complicated. No. Really?
Score.
That's it?
Score.
And seriously, I set up my whole evening based on like more contentious discussion on this. I'm gonna be contentious. So is this a good time, Monica, for me to ask the question that everyone's gonna freak out about a little when I ask?
Maybe another question.
The letter from FTA.
So
you can ask the question?
Sure.
Okay. So newspaper tells me that FTA sent a letter to Metro. Don't freak, Jay especially, Jay and Alice, definitely don't freak out. It's all cool. FTA said, the internet tells me. I gotta set this up, because someone's gonna go, oh my god, have you noticed that? So the internet tells me that FTA sent a letter to Metro with some, I don't know if they're, on the gentle side, recommendations, on the stronger side,
directive.
Expectations. Directives, perhaps. I'm not sure what they are yet. Suggesting a number of things that Metro needs to do in the short to medium term to improve safety. One of those things is fewer rail cars per train.
Yes.
That told you braces on. So we've got a project that's on this recommended list that is upgrade the electrical system so we can have more rail cars per train. It seems to me that we need very clear and explicit guidance from on high at Metro, from the highest levels. Mr. Lienfeld can have my cell phone now if he wants it. But I'm going to write it anyway, about clarifying what Metro's expectation of these blue line improvements is relative to the suggestions and or demands that FTA is making. Because if we have to have shorter cars, then we don't need to fund a project that allows us to have longer cars. But I can't imagine that the right solution to anything at Metro is shorter trains. This is, well, but because it's a safety issue versus a capacity issue.
Is it because...
You want to jump in?
So we are aware of the directive from FTA to Metro. I have contacted Metro asking what is their interpretation of the directive from FTA in regards to their ability to implement 8-car traction power upgrades for the blue line. And of course it has to run up the chain. And I did tell Metro that we need a affirmative answer prior to the July 1 Planning and Programming Committee meeting.
And I guess the other question that might need to be asked is, and I'm not trying to make this, hopefully this is all, we're all cool in the gang on this, but obviously there are other projects on here. We have a Metro station on here. We probably have other things on here that connect into Metro in some way. And I don't know if there's a domino, if there is a challenge with traction power upgrades, then is there a domino effect? If there's not a problem with traction power upgrades, there's probably not a domino effect to anything else. But if there is there a domino effect to some other project that might make us think better or worse of that project relative to this new letter?
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. We have made the initial outreach, and we will have some sort of response from Metro prior to your July 1 key planning and programming committee meeting.
Does the MBTA have a copy of the FTA letter?
I can send a copy to the full authority. I believe some members have a copy. I think there were two directives. One was issued on the 7th, and the other came out a day or two ago.
Could those be sent? Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, would it be correct to say that the FTA did not include a check to pay for all that they're demanding along with their demands?
My understanding is that is correct. And that's why I want to hear from on high. Whichever on high.
Talking about. Yes.
I need someone who makes more per year than I do to tell me the answer. Hopefully a lot more. It's not hard to make a lot more than Allison.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm glad that you shared that. Ms. Bulla and I, we were at this meeting yesterday at COG. Councilman Jack Evans was there to present as chair of WMATA direct and forceful statement regarding what is happening and what we as a region, in conjunction hopefully with the federal government, will have to do. I won't, say everything that he said at all, but I don't need to remind all of you, but just in case, you were in Hawaii at the time, but when the silver line is great, but the blue line, one of the issues has been that those of us who take the blue line in have to wait at the platform much longer, and the trains when they do come through are very full, and the crowds on the platform are very full, and it sometimes is like a scene out of Tokyo. So and it's just inconvenient and to say the least. And plus, of course, it's always safety first, and all of us have been reading about what the new head of WMATA is trying to do, and all of us want our metro system, the economic spine of our region, to be safe and reliable. The plan of action for the safety plan, if you will, affects our stations first, primarily, and it'll be over the summer in the beginning. But we're all in this together. All of our citizens and all the tourists and all the business community, they need to know that it's safe to get on the metro. In terms of this recent letter, I can't comment on that. But in general, where the rubber hits the road for those of us in Alexandria, but also Arlington and Fairfax, is this blue line conundrum in terms of, people have to get into wherever they're going to go. And if you're waiting forever, 15, 20 minutes for a train, and then you can't even get on because it's packed. And I was riding the blue line train every day from the Pentagon to K Street just last year. And for quite a while, not just last year, but and it was... I could just see the sea change. It was very obvious. And I expressed this to COG and to my colleagues on the council in Alexandria. It's not just that you go to the ends of the train and you might find space. It was physically uncomfortable to be on the metro trains. People were grumbling horribly. So whether it was summer or winter, it was physically uncomfortable. So what I've heard from a number of people, because of that and because of the lack of reliability and now the safety concerns, a lot of people have decided to drive. And we all know what that means. So
So anyway, I just wanted to say we will. I look forward to seeing that letter. I don't think I've seen that letter.
Sure.
Yeah, I think I would remember seeing that letter.
That's new. Again, let me be clear. I don't want anyone to hear me saying that I don't think we should fund Blue Line. But if we, I think we probably should fund Blue Line. I think we're one of the most critical projects in the region. That said, I don't want to fund it if I'm going to get, I want to be told before we decide to fund it, rather than after we decide to fund it, that it's not, that they're not going to take the money. That's the piece. And
it may be just a timing issue as well.
It may be. I mean, this may get bumped. You know, who knows? But we'll have to. This is the new big sack of flour that's going to get dumped in the middle of the process, if possible. So,
you know that of the many things that we do, the idea of adding a train to Metro seemed to be such an obvious fix, something that made incredibly good sense. And to me, if the federal government is to say, well, we just don't like that, you know, knock off a train, they are going to need to have an utterly compelling reason. And now I'm sure, you know, maybe there is some bit of a safety benefit, but I have difficulty even seeing that. I mean, what safety benefit do you
want? Shorter cars. Was the suggestion or
the Blue Line would still exist. It's just that what Chairman Noe is saying is there'd be fewer cars,
well,
and then
exactly
the congestion.
I mean, that the idea of extending the number of trains is such an obvious plus up.
I've got a Metro board member here.
Yeah.
I'm going to put you on the spot, Paul.
Yeah.
For those of you know, Paul Smedberg is a member of the Alexandria Council and is a member of the Metro board.
You name everyone.
And I realize the person in this room that I've probably known the longest.
That's true. It's gonna be. We were in
Sorensen. That's right,
2001.
Anyway.
Good evening. I'm Paul Smedberg. I'm a member of the Alexandria City Council and a member of the NBTC and appointed through NBTC to the Metro Board. I'm relatively new to the board, but have gotten up to speed very quickly. And I will say there are two directives from FTA. That is correct. One issue that is being discussed directly with Mr. Wiedefeld and the FTA and the Secretary of Transportation is that statement in there about reducing the cars from 8 to 6. I would keep the project on your list. And the second directive that came out is in direct relation to the SafeTrack plan that the general manager announced a little over, a week ago or so, which will be finalized around May 16th. But FTA has come forward with three sections of track that they believe are more important and should go first than the ones that Mr. Wiedefeld has in his draft plan.
It's like the Minnesota Avenue.
There's part of the Silver Line from East Falls Church to Ballston, and part of the Green Line from Potomac Avenue to, I forgot where it goes exactly. But anyway, it puts it in a different priority. And the reason why Mr. Wiedefeld chose Springfield, Franconia, to Huntington and Eisenhower for the first round is because it's the one that it would be the easiest to tackle, and they could work on how they're going to procedurally lay this out, you know, look at the equipment, how it's working, how the teams are working, and then, you know, they can, you know, move forward. So that's why that project was put on first, so they could, you know, get some lessons learned and then move forward to the more, you know, much more complicated projects. I will say, though, you know, the SafeTrack plan is hopefully going to be moving forward, and I think it will. But that doesn't mean that other basic maintenance work isn't still ongoing and happening right now, because it is. So it's separate from what's going on, but it will be complementary, obviously. And the SafeTrack plan will be condensed from a 3-year time period to a 1-year time period and get the system to a state of steady, good state of repair.
so they can get on a cycle of doing regular logical maintenance, which, you know, hasn't been done very well. So that's what's on the table.
I don't want to belabor this too. Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't want to belabor this too much, but I think we just that's something that's got to be a priority piece of information, I think. So now that I stirred that up, anything else, Sharon?
When you're ready for a motion, I don't believe we need a motion to, so why don't I put that on the table, Mr. Chairman?
I just want to make sure, so this you're closing out the presentation and getting to your action item?
Yes.
Okay,
thank you.
For minimal five. And so the action item is for us to advance our list of projects public hearing, and I would move approval to advance all 24 projects under consideration for the draft fiscal year 2017 program for public comment.
Second motion, Bruno. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Awesome. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, please. Not to make the meeting any longer, but Mr. Evans has been making the rounds. Some of us heard his presentation for the second time at Todd yesterday, and we also heard the same plea at our last MBTC meeting last week, I guess it was. I was asking for several things. First of all, for us to consider a regional funding source revenue to fund Metro, especially operating, and then also to focus on a bridge to getting to Allison's point, to either another bridge or expanded bridge tunnel. For Metro. So that we can increase capacity and make room for folks. And the third thing that he was hoping for our assistance with is reaching out to the federal government. They do provide funding for capital, but not for operations. And he pointed out that this, after all, is the workforce of the federal government for the most part. That is being served by Metro, and shouldn't they help? Because they certainly have been at the table, you know, criticizing, and rightfully so, but they could also be helpful. So anyway, I just wanted to say that. So for our long-term, you know, planning for this body, you know, those are some of the things that you know, we really are going to need to focus on.
I have a question. How is he envisioning? Is he envisioning more from each locality, or more state input, or sort of regional tax, or what is? I didn't hear his.
And that is a very good question, because all of our jurisdictions have different authorities, and so the D.C. government could do something. Maryland, could perhaps. Adopt something. They get their funding, or WMATA gets their funding from Maryland, from the state. In Virginia, much of our money that goes to WMATA comes from gasoline taxes that are regional, and there's also some state funding. But and then localities put money in from their general fund. In Virginia, we don't have the authority to adopt a consistent regional funding mechanism. So it would be the General Assembly that would need to consider that. And Senator Barker was at the meeting at COG yesterday, and offered, you know, on part of the members of the Northern Virginia delegation to try to get folks together to have that discussion. And I pointed out after the meeting to Chuck Bean and also to Jack Evans that we just raised the sales tax in Northern Virginia for House Bill 2313 funding. And we also have a, you know, gasoline tax that we use.
Motor vehicle fuel sales tax.
Exactly, right. So anyway, there needs to be discussion, especially in Virginia on the state level, as to what our authorities would be or could be.
And if I might, Mr. Chairman, the language from each jurisdiction has to be the same. That was brought up repeatedly yesterday at the COG meeting. So, and they're under a lot of time constraint. They're talking very soon over the summer, actually, and into the fall. But they don't want to wait. It was a very intense meeting yesterday, I would say. Is that about right?
That's how I would describe it that way.
And now, one other thing that Councilman Jack Evans said yesterday that I thought was important was regarding the finances at WMATA. And that he, I think his phrase was, off the top of my head, it was something to the effect of that their finances are in terrible shape. Their debt, the way they've managed things, the way they don't share. He's the chairman of the board, and he has a hard time getting them to share information with him. He was very blunt and clear in his message regarding all of the above. And I think that is hopefully changing under this new leadership that we have there. I certainly hope so, especially considering the fact that the safety issues, the reliability issues, but also the funding that they're required, that we all need to pull in together as a region because it's so critically important.
The language that Allison was referring to, there's already on the table the safety, or what is it called?
The safety commission,
that would be, you know, a joint organization, you know, that would consist of Maryland, Virginia, and D.C. And so that already is something that's being discussed, and he was pushing for the funding mechanism, regional funding mechanism, to be sort of blended in to that bill, since that bill is...
Into the safety bill,
exactly. Well,
for Mr. Evans' discussion, was the whole discussion centered around the revenue side? Was there a discussion about finances and expenditures and any savings out there? I don't know if there's any savings out there, but was it a pure revenue increase, or was there, hey, we anticipate we can do this to improve the management? Or I don't know, maybe there's no improvement out there, but I'm just asking. Was that part of the discussion?
He was mainly putting on the table their dire financial situation.
I'll say this on the
pension. The pension issue.
And the pension issues. We could have a whole meeting on the pension issue.
The NBTC.
They have unfunded pension liability of like $2 billion,
2.5.
that they would like for the federal government to take over. And interestingly, there's some precedent for that because when the District of Columbia got themselves into financial trouble and were taken over with a receivership, the federal government took over their $2 billion unfunded pension.
It was higher.
So I forget I was going to jump in. At the MTC meeting, one of the things that he did talk some about the expenditure side. Yeah. The challenge is the largest cost that is not a fixed cost that they have is salaries and benefits.
Right.
Like every government, salaries and benefits is the biggest piece of the pie. And you have... way you laid it out was there's only really 10 large subway systems in the country. Their employees are all represented by the same union. And our ability to change the salary and benefit structure is quite limited by that fact.
Is the contract up this summer for renewal, though?
Yes. Yes.
So that might be a discussion item.
Especially
they're not optimistic.
The federal government is willing to help with the unfunded, you know, benefit liability, you know, in return, maybe, you know, for a better, you know, situation as far as, you know, compensation and benefits. Maybe that's all we need to do.
And out of all the top, Mr. Chairman, out of all the major metropolitan areas with the mass transit system, with Metro, or subway system. We're the only ones, the DC Metro area, we're the only ones without a dedicated revenue stream, as we know. So I think that was, it was as exactly as Sharon articulated the whole three or four part ask that he had. It was definitely three or four, I'm not sure which, prong approach that he had. Anyway, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, when Ms. Revens appeared at NBTC last week, and at least three of us were there. He came with a big ask, as they would say in
development. He admitted it was big.
And $3 million for another tunnel underneath the Potomac River. He made it clear that a bridge crossing solution would not work structurally with Metro. He did bring up that Metro has never had a dedicated funding source. You've got resources in the federal government. He talked about the maintenance, deferred maintenance problems. And he did mention the incredibly huge unfunded pension liability that is probably one of those structural issues that would require us to get into the WMATA compact itself if you really want to fix. And I realize that's a big issue, but I don't see how you cure that mega issue without getting into the compact itself.
Mr. Chairman, just one more point. Going to the cost structure, and we've got to look at the numbers. We'll get them to you. We've had some of the staff, and I think some of the members, General Assembly members and others, have looked into some of the Metro costs. And I don't know. I've got to get a definitive answer. But it appears that the costs per mile are probably double some of the other major transit systems. So the cost per mile, labor mile, the labor costs per mile seem to be double what they are in New York or Chicago mm-hmm. and some of these other major metropolitan areas, which is just an interesting thing that we may want to look at. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but that's what some of the members have, and some of the staff, and some of the preliminary works have said, and it'd be something for consideration in the discussion item.
Okay, let's move on. Mr. Jasper, transaction.
Thank you. Just very briefly, I don't have much to add to the report that's in your packet, but it's been some months since we've come to the authority to provide a bit of an update, and one is certainly very relevant right now. Just a reminder, the transaction is an unconstrained plan, and certainly discussion about new crossings of the Potomac may be very much in the domain of transaction as we move forward. As a reminder, the authority adopted the vision statement for transaction in December of last year. We provided an update to the March meeting of the Planning and Programming Committee. And as of right now, we're really getting deep into technical activities and public engagement activities. As far as the technical work is concerned, kind of in parallel, we're looking at regional transportation needs and developing a database of candidate regional projects to address those needs. We're also in the early stages of developing what we're calling alternative future scenarios to help the robustness of the plan essentially address uncertainty in long-range transportation planning. And looking at possible alternative future scenarios with the premise that projects or project packages that perform well under multiple future scenarios could be considered to be more robust. So that's really why we're doing that. I also just want to note that we're working closely with Transportation Planning Board staff to incorporate the round 9.0 employment land use forecasts, which won't officially be released until the fall, but TPB has agreed for us to work with them so that we can incorporate that into our work so that when we come to you a year from now with a draft transaction plan, we won't have to explain to you why we're using out-of-date forecasts at that time. So we're building in those new forecasts now as we move forward and adjusting our schedule slightly to accommodate that. The other main area which we're very heavily involved in right now is public engagement. I've mentioned this several times before, I think. So far we've had a couple of what we call pop-up events and one workshop. The reaction so far has been extremely positive. People have actually come up to us and thanked us for reaching out to get their views on transportation in Northern Virginia. So that really is coming across very well. We've already met with hundreds of people on a one-on-one basis, which is what we hope to do. So there's 4 more workshops and 8 more pop-up events. So hopefully you'll find the opportunity to perhaps participate in some of those. And as always, I urge members of the authority to work with whomever they need to work with to inform residents and businesses and visitors to the region to engage with the transaction process, whether that be one-on-one with us or through the website.
And if I could, I appreciate the members who are sending transaction updates as part of your distribution list to your constituents. If you need more information from us so that you can include it, we will be more than willing to write something up for you. So thank you.
I will use this. I'll give you a reminder to give every month. We've got some new people here. Transaction update is the greatest time of the decade for a Northern Virginia local official or state official. Because it's the time when people come and complain to you about traffic and say, I completely agree with you. Go to this website and tell me exactly how you feel, and we will ensure that it gets incorporated into our work. And once we're done, you don't have that to hide behind anymore. So nvtatransaction.org. We'll take all the comments we can get.
Absolutely.
Any comments, questions about transactions?
I just have one item, Mr. Chairman, and I will be brief. Last month, I guess it was last month, I came to you regarding the CMAQ deficit that we were facing in the region. We have taken care of that, and I want to thank the localities and agencies who agreed to give money to compensate for the deficit. Again, they will be made whole when we go back and make the adjustments. We've been informed that there is now a deficit in the CMAQ PM 2.5, so I will be coming back to you at your June meeting to ask for action on how we address that deficit.
Any questions for Ms. Backman? Any other items to come before the authority this evening?
After this discussion of Metro, I'm wondering if the developments at TPD and the COG board can be fed into our work on a regular basis. I know many of us sit on the same thing, but for example, their analysis of the day that Metro shut down, what people did, how they responded, things like teleworking begin to look like they perhaps ought to receive more priority than it traditionally does in transportation planning. So it's a request that we not only look at specifically what we need to do, but we're getting the bigger picture that's being developed by other entities, particularly COG and the TPD.
And if I could, Mr. Chairman, we do have TPB participating in our transaction subcommittee. I think Rich is still here, who works for Conti, Mr. Shrikant, down at the Transportation Planning Board. But also, I've been in communication with Mr. Shrikant regarding some of the studies and assessments that they've done. So, number one, I don't want us to have to reinvent the wheel. And if the data is already out there, then we can incorporate it into the plan.
Mr. Chairman, just one observation. As I read through the material on transaction, the vision plan that was adopted, I noticed that the one omission that I'm sure we agree should be in there is that it has nothing about reducing traffic congestion. We talked about everything else, but I think if you ask the public, they would probably put that number one.
That's actually one of the performance measures and objectives that we're looking at. Senator Black, we're looking at the performance measure. So reducing traffic congestion is one of the objectives, and now we're looking at some performance measures to get us to how we go about reducing congestion. So we wanted the vision statement, I guess, to be a little more global and then having certain goals and objectives with performance measures so we can do an analysis on it on how to get there.
I suppose I would just take the blunt approach and just put it in there. But I'm just a thought.
All right. Anything else? All right. Not adjourned. Thank you all very much.